Melanchon, a Southern Gothic erotic romance writer, attempting to figure out how to live my most enchanted life. Enchanted Beast Podcast is my new imaginary best friend, where I come to work my own spiritual shit out without necessarily feeling like I'm having conversations with myself. So feel free to join me. But remember, this podcast is where I let my enchanted beast roam wild and free. She is not tamed, timid, or tactful. But what she is? Well, Lilith is bold, essential, authentic, spiritual, and my yardstick of truth. So welcome to the Enchanted Forest. I look forward to seeing you here. Thank you for tuning in to Enchanted Beast Podcast, Season 4, Episode 7. In this episode, entitled, I Think Somebody's Trying to Set Me Up, Ella talks about the systematic implementation of the decadent lifestyle trap and how to work it to your advantage and live your most enchanted life. And now, your host, Southern Gothic erotic romance writer, Ella Sean. Hello, my enchanted beast. How are you? It is so good to be back in the Enchanted Forest with you guys again. I mean, I know I'm a couple of days late, right? Because usually it's posted by the 14th. But give me a break. My baby girl turned 15 on the 15th. It was her golden birthday. You know we had to celebrate. So, anywho, I'm here. You're here. We have a lot to talk about. 2 weeks seems like a very long time between spending these intimate moments with friends. And still, I think it's very important that I take those 2 weeks to rejuvenate and meditate and get myself together to come back and hopefully figure some more shit out, right? Because I have a lot that I need to get through. So, anywho, when we last walked in the forest together, we kind of ended up with these deeply thorned characters. And so I think the next focus that I have as a Southern Gothic erotic romance writer, after I meet my characters and they tell me all about their thorns and we kind of get into it, their thorns usually lead to decadent realities, right? And it's that decadent reality that I think makes writing Southern Gothic anything fun to write. And there are so many misconceptions around the word decadent, decadence. Most people don't hear the truth of the word when we speak it in such golden, glittery, beautiful terms. Oh, that chiffon mousse is decadent. His kisses are what decadence is made of. Like, we always speak in terms of euphoria, joy, satisfaction, gratification, when we think about the word decadent, decadence. We don't hear decay, decline, right? Because who would ever associate decay with something as wonderful as a champagne chiffon mousse? No one. We associate beauty, elegance, elevation with decadence. And that's kind of what I'm talking about in this podcast. How being so confused about that word, how it is used, how it is provided and given to us, how that in and of itself perpetuates the trap. And in Southern Gothic writing style, that is usually what keeps everything so static, the pursuit of decadence, because we associate it with elegance, pleasure, leisure. I'd like to share with you a quote from the first installment of my Broken Soul series, Âmes Brisées, which is French for broken souls. It's the first book. It was published in 2018, and it's where we meet our Southern Gothic hero, Jonathan Reynard Ellis. It's also where we meet a character named Auntie. At least that's what everybody in the neighborhood calls her. Auntie is a pivotal character. Her thorns run deep and plenty. The thing is, outside of this first, 5 to 10 chapters in the first book, we don't see in her anymore. We don't get any more of Auntie per se. However, she is all through the series. She is so important. So much so, I ended up writing a kind of prequel novella entitled Shattered Beginnings, The Diary of Della Richmond, because her character is so very important to understanding all the shit that goes on in the Broken Souls series. So if you would like to read that, it is a true example of Southern Gothic erotica and maybe a romance. The beginnings of a romance, right? But it is also so important to understanding how Auntie becomes the catalyst for all the stuff that takes place in this series. So if you want to read it, I'll be sure to put a link in the description. And you just need to sign up for my newsletter. I send it out once a week, and it's just, updates, free books, contests, things like that, giveaways. But yeah, I'll leave a link. So this is a quote where Auntie is speaking with a 16-year-old John for the first time. And she says, "I know this is not what y'all young boys used to listening to, but I think it's important for you to expand your horizons when it comes to music and books and movies and art, because then you'll be ready for the darker, deeper, more decadent experiences that can come from those expanded horizons." Oh, Auntie. So there we are, thinking about decadence. We're getting ready to jump into it. If this is your first time tuning in to Enchanted Beast Podcast, thank you so much for joining me in the Enchanted Forest. And please subscribe so that you'll know when I upload more content. and become a part of this enchanted walk with me. So I want to throw out some key words and some key points. These are the things we're focusing on in this podcast episode. So keywords, I want you to really, really pay attention to decadent, that word in all its forms, decay, decadence, decadent, lifestyle. We use that a lot, right? That term is thrown out 24/7. I'm a lifestyle blogger. I'm a lifestyle coach. I'm a lifestyle manager. Like, lifestyle is one of these words that we don't really think about, but it's like everywhere. Trap, and not the trap of trapping, or I guess like that's, I don't even know if drug dealers still call it trapping. Yeah, it pays to get older and not care about stuff like that. So, yeah, trap. Think about that. The word design. I love that word. Luxurious. Right? A lot of people break it down to luxe, right? It's luxurious. Okay, so hold on to that. Active and passive. These are the key words that we're focusing on in this episode of I think somebody trying to set me up. Pay attention, people. I'm going to get going. And you know what happens when that happens. I have three key points that I'm going to focus on today. Factors that determine lifestyle, like the factors determining what kind of lifestyle you have or I have, right? And I want to really debunk this decadence myth. I'm so very tired of people assuming that decadence is, we'll get to it. The design principles of a lifestyle trap, because that is something that I've been having these conversations with my daughter, my oldest daughter, and it kind of really, it was weird because this is where my podcast was going, and then we've been talking about it unbeknownst to her. So it's been really, really weird, but also really insightful too, listening to a 20-year-old talk about traps. So this segment, we're going to really kind of figure out what are the determining factors of a person's lifestyle. So a lifestyle, like my own Elishon layman's definition, is the way in which we live our lives, what we hold true, what is true for us, what we value, our moral code of conduct, how we move through life, right? That is our lifestyle. And there are so many different factors that go into building or establishing that lifestyle. You know, the basic ones are diet, exercise, you know, whether or not you're going to be a drinker or a smoker, or whether or not you're going to use drugs, your sexual practice, your sexual preferences, your sexuality, your gender identity, the community you vibe with. What are your values? How much money do you have coming in? Do you have good health care? Are you down with adequate health care? Are you not receiving good health care? Geographical locations, where you live determines, has a lot to do with your personal lifestyle. What are your spiritual practices? Do you have any? Are you a traditional, you know, religious person? Are you a spiritualist? Are you agnostic, atheist? Like, what's the deal? Educational level, educational values, social engagements. Who do you vibe with? Who are you kicking it with when you are not being by yourself? Mental health. Are you dealing with your mental health? Everyone assumes that mental health is only for those who have mental illness. Side note, if you are alive and you have mental faculties, you have mental health concerns that need to be checked. If you are alive and you are walking and you are living and you are interacting with yourself and others, I can almost guarantee you that, you have some mental health issues that need to be looked at and dealt with, right? So the number of changes or the amount of changes, also known here on Enchanted Beast Podcast as trauma. So how you deal with it, how it was dealt with when it happened, like what were your changes? What were your traumas, right? Adversity, like they have a whole adversity quotient to determine if a kid's going to be resilient or not. Like what the hell? Do you benefit from any privileges? What are you exposed to? Are you out there in the world, seeing everyone, seeing everything, traveling extensively, being exposed to the arts and languages and boating and all these other things? Do you have very limited exposure to worldly things, but you are heavily exposed to more earthy things like gardening and canning and kind of homesteading things? Like what are you exposed to? What are your opportunities either, you know, handed to you, given to you, created by you or for you? Like do you even know how to recognize opportunities when they come your way? And that was a podcast. I'll link that in the description as well. Being able to recognize and take advantage of opportunities avail of the opportunities as they are presented. Knowledge. What is your knowledge source? Like, where are you getting your information? Do you have knowledge of a wide variety of things or just a few things? I mean, are you knowledgeable at all? Like, what's the deal? And understanding. Do you have understanding of a few things, a lot of things, everything, nothing? Do you understand anything, right? Do you even understand that there's a difference between knowledge and understanding? Like these things create the lifestyle you're going to live. Who are you connected to? What are you connected to? What keeps you grounded? Why do you choose your connections? Like, and that is a tiny list, because everything and anything become a part of what creates a lifestyle for you. So you might be asking yourself, because I found myself wondering, well, how in the hell did I establish my lifestyle? How did I establish a lifestyle? Not the one I'm in right now, but the one that led up to this. Like, what did I do to go in the direction that I went in and ended up in suburban hell, living that lifestyle of a suburban working mother and wife? Who said that was the lifestyle I ever wanted? You know? And so I'm thinking about Vivian, my character. She ended up with John right in college, never experiencing anyone else. She ends up his sub, then his fiance, then his wife, and they have this very lush life, and it is so strange to her because all of this time she realizes, or after all the time, like right now I'm almost finished with the whole rewriting of Consecrated Souls, the third book in the series. And Vivian has gone through so many changes and she has learned so much about herself. She's like, who said I wanted to be the wife of a CEO who's overly concerned with appearances? Who said I wanted a mini McMansion on the lake, all decked out in all this heavy French provincial pompous furniture? Who said that? How did I establish this? I didn't. And that's the truth for most of us. Most of us don't establish the lifestyle we find ourselves in. we fall into what I can only call a systematically designed lifestyle trap. Because think about when you start creating your lifestyle. Think about when you start moving into your lifestyle. For most of us, it's about 18 years of age. 17 if you're a summer baby. Most of us are 18 when we start laying the foundation for our lifestyle. Now, I want you to think back to when you were 18 years old. I was 18 in 1993, I think. Yeah. I turned 18 in 1992. I graduated high school in 1993 at 18. And later that year, I turned 19. Lots of someones talked to all of us when we were in high school. The military branches came by and they talked with us to tell us about the wonderful opportunities of going into the military and serving our country offered us. Lots of colleges came through. We can offer you this. This is going to be an amazing opportunity for you. We need you on our campus. You have what we want, and we can give you what you need. Think back to being an 18-year-old girl or guy. Now I'm 46. Getting ready, I'm knocking on 47's door. I'm 46 years old. 18 years ago, my middle daughter is getting ready to turn 18 this year. And we expect these babies to go out and make lifestyle choices that will create a foundation for the rest of their life, of their lives. So I'm going back to me, and I'll reference Vivian as well. 18 years old, you need to make a choice. You're either going to go to university, go to a technical school, go to a trade school, go into the military, or go right into the workforce. And that workforce can be legal or illegal. It doesn't matter. You're either going to go to work, you're going to go to school somewhere, or you're going to go into the military. At 18. If you go into school and or you go into a trade school, you are expected to choose something that will earn you a living for the rest of your life. You're 18. You don't even know what the rest of your life looks like. You don't know what jobs are going to even be out there when you're ready to really sit down and work. Like, you are 18 years old. We want you to go to college. And then we want you to figure out your life in 4 years while you're there, so that when you come out at 22, you know exactly who you are and the life you want to live. Who said that? Who the hell said that? And yet, as parents, we keep perpetuating the same crazy foolishness. As parents, we keep giving our children one of three or four options. None of them, mind you, conducive to creating the enchanted life we all deserve to live. Right? So how did I establish my lifestyle? How does one establish their lifestyle? We don't. You didn't, I didn't, nobody does. Nobody gets to establish their lifestyle from the onset unless, you know, unless they are of a different socioeconomic class. Perhaps they get to establish their lifestyle from the onset. But for most of us, no. For most of us, we didn't make choices when we were 18. We didn't make a choice to go to college or a trade school or a tech school. We didn't make a choice to you know, go into the workforce or, you know, go and do other types of industrious endeavors to earn money. We didn't make a choice to go into the military or go into, you know, some other type of service-oriented situation. No, we were given very limited options. And you didn't choose an option as much as you accepted the one that was the lesser evil of what was presented to you. Right? You chose the one that was most, you didn't choose it, you accepted the one that was most palatable at the time. So if someone hands you a plate with chicken fried frog legs and jellied eel, skunk testicles that have been boiled, and creamed goat brains. First of all, I know frog legs are eaten. I've had them back when I used to eat meat. I know jellied eel is a delicacy in London. I have no idea if people eat goat's brains. And I am pretty sure, at least I'm hopeful, that no one's eating boiled skunk testicles. However, these are your options. If you want to survive and you want sustenance, these are your four options. Now, for most people, they would not choose any of that. I would not choose to eat a frog leg right now. I would not choose to eat jellied eel or, you know, creamed goat brains. And certainly, I would not want a skunk's testicles in my mouth. Now, I am not opposed to testicles in my mouth, but they cannot be long to a skunk. Okay. What we're not going to do, ill. So anywho, these are your options though. If you don't want to perish, then you need to accept one of these options. Of course, you will accept the one that is most palatable. And, you know, for me, I'm choosing frog legs because they really do taste like fried chicken wings. Same texture, everything. I'm going with the chicken fried frog legs because I can stomach that. You see what I'm saying? So we didn't establish anything because to establish something means you had choices. You were actively engaged in the creating of that. No, we accepted the most palatable option from the options we were given. And then at some point we realize that we have been duped, hoodwinked, bamboozled, right? We realize that we are in this lifestyle that does not match who we are as individuals. We wake up and it's like, damn, this is just not where I saw myself. I thought I would be somewhere else, someone else, with somebody else, this is just not what I thought my life was going to be. I am not who I thought I was going to be. Because unfortunately, at the age of 18, when we accepted the most palatable of the options presented to us, we fell into a decadent lifestyle trap. We had no idea that accepting one of those options was luring us into a trap of epic proportions that would take years and years to disentangle ourselves from. We didn't see the trap. We didn't know there was a trap. We didn't even think to question if it was or was not a trap. We just accepted the option. And that little bit of acceptance, that tiny, tiny bit of acquiescence at the tender age of 18 propelled us along the route of passive engagement and sent us from trap to trap to trap to decadent lifestyle trap. So I'm going to take a super duper quick break right here, because guess what? It's time for me to have some tea. So I'm going to go and make some tea, and I'll be right back with you in a moment. Sometimes we have to be broken before we are able to see the beauty of our light reflected in the mirrors of our soul. Pick up Alishan's Broken Souls series, books 1 and 2, wherever you shop for your favorite books. I'm Sprise and Mirrored Souls. Available on Amazon, Nook, iBook, and Kobo. And we're back. Welcome to the second leg of our walk through the Enchanted Forest. I'm your host, Alishan. Let's get to it. It's word nerd girl moment. It's time to debunk this myth of decadence. Thank you so much for coming back, hanging out with me. We're going to get through this, because this is like the meat and potatoes of this meal, okay? So I'm always looking for great quotes. I'm always researching. You guys know the drill. And I'm looking for quotes about decadence. Quotes that use the phrase decadence, or use the word, excuse me, decadence, in a way that is appropriate. So I found this quote from the novel Handle with Care, written by novelist Jodi Picou, where she uses the word decadence in the very familiar way that we use the word decadence. And I thought, yeah, this is going to illustrate why we need to debunk this myth. So here's the quote. "I want him to feel what I felt when I was with him. That incredible combination of comfort, decadence, and wonder. The knowledge that with just a single taste of him, I was addicted. Now, we love the beautiful phrasing of that, the sensuality of it, the carnality of it. She wanted him to know the decadence of being addicted to him, of loving him, the wonder of it. So when we hear the word decadence used like that, which, let us be clear, is how we usually hear the word decadence or decadent used, then what are we to believe this word means? What does it insinuate? Does it conjure in your mind thoughts of decay and decline and decrepitness and destruction? Or does it bring about fantasies of beautiful things, luxurious things, enjoyable, pleasurable, satisfying things, right? So let's break this thing down, word nerd girl style. So today's word is decadent. Now, here's how the word is defined. Characterized by or reflecting a state of moral or cultural decline. Semicolon, for those of you who are not all about the grammar, a semicolon is that period with the comma under it to let you know that it could be all you need to be a complete sentence. However, you want to add just a little bit more on as clarification. So, the first part of this definition says, characterized by or reflecting a state of moral or cultural decline. Semicolon. Luxuriously self-indulgent. Wait, what now? Decadent means moral or cultural decline. Like morally, I don't give a shit about anything or anyone. Or cultural decline, like, oh my gosh, America is so decadent, it's going to hell in a handbasket with gasoline thongs on. Like, is that what decadent means? And then it is luxuriously self-indulgent. So to be morally and culturally decrepit is to luxuriate in my own pleasure. I'm confused. So I said, okay, fine. Perhaps this definition can be called a paradox or an oxymoron. Maybe it is going to reveal some initial truth. Now it also, because I have to dig deeper, I can't be a self-professed word nerd if I'm not digging a little deeper. So we have two parts to this word, deca and dent. Most people wouldn't break this word down in this way, because why? Doesn't make any sense. But, you know, I'm a word nerd girl. I'm all about breaking it down as far as I can get it. So if we think about the first part of the word, deca, then we're looking at 10, having 10, of 10, right? Deca, 10. Decagon, 10-sided polygon, right? And the word dent, it means a slight hollow in a hard, even surface made by a blow or by the exertion of pressure. It also means a diminishing effect, a reduction, have an adverse effect on, to diminish. Okay, so if we have deca, which means 10 or having 10. Imperfections, diminishing situations caused by pressure or a blow, adverse effects. So we could have 10 adverse effects caused by a blow or pressure. So how do we get from cultural moral decline, having up to 10 diminishing adverse effects on what could possibly be just a nice, hard, smooth surface? How do we get from that to luxuriously self-indulgent? So now our next word, I'm looking at this word luxurious. What does that mean? How do we associate luxurious with decadent, decay? I want you to really think about the word decay. Roadkill decays on the side of the road. All matter of things in our environment decay once they have expired. In Southern Gothic literature, when we talk about decadence, we are looking at the moral and cultural decline, and we like to juxtapose that to the decline of physical spaces. Like in my Broken Soul series, to look back at the home where John incurred so much damage, where he received so much trauma, where he underwent so many changes, and that is where he grew his thorns. We look back and the house that he grew up in, it is a decadent place. It is in a state of decay, and he works so hard to keep it from being that way. The house he met Auntie in would have fallen into a state of decadence had he not wanted to preserve it so that, well, you have to read it. But Southern Gothic writers, we use the physically decaying world as a way to illustrate the moral, the spiritual, the cultural decline and decay of the societies about which we write. How do you get luxuriously self-indulgent? How do you get luxury from decay? So the word luxurious means extremely wealthy, elegant, or enjoyable, especially in a way that involves great expense. How can the definition of luxurious be a part of the definition of decadence? Let's compare and contrast. Decadent. We're looking at decay, regression, vanity, destruction, defeat, depravity. Like, none of this is what we are going to go home and brag about being a part of our lifestyle. Hey, guys, I live in a decaying house. I have regressed to the mental state of a toddler. I want what I want when I want it. I do what I want when I want to do it. And I'm not responsible for any of my actions. By the way, I'm about as vain as you're going to come across. So I have a depraved nature. I enjoy debauchery. The filthier, the better. The dirtier, the nicer. And then there's luxurious, comfortable, elegant, enjoyable, expensive, leisure, pleasure, sensuality. I'm down with luxurious. I'm so down with luxurious, I'm like four flat tires of luxury, okay? But I don't know about this whole decadent nonsense. So that brings me to this whole kind of association of a decadent lifestyle and why so many of us fall into the decadent lifestyle trap. Il fait attenzione, s'il te plaît, please, because this is going to go quickly. There's so many definitions floating around out there of this decadent lifestyle. So I'm researching, I'm Googling, and all I see are these really, really beautiful people having a wonderful time, drinking expensive wines and whiskey and champagne, dressed in the best clothes, dripping in diamonds, really living high on the hog. They are the ones who can establish their lifestyle. So why is it that those people who can establish their lifestyles through active choice making, why are they associated with decadence? Moral decline and cultural decay. Why? And then I figured it out. You've heard the word posh. All things elegant, stylishly luxurious, of high social class, in a refined or upper class way, it is the quality of being elegant, stylish. It is being of the upper crust, not the upper crust like, oh, I worked my ass off and now I am a multimillionaire. No, we're not talking about that. Not I grind and I do what I need to do and now I'm a multibillionaire. Nope. Not talking about that. We are talking about these few people in the world who were born into aristocracy. People who have never in the history of their family known anything other than wealth, access, luxury, refinement, beauty, leisure. Like, not the people who came to America and now Rockefeller's family doesn't have to work. No. I am talking about those persons whose families have never, ever known a day of true work. Those are the posh people. They're not in America. Well, one of them is in America now. Hello, Prince Harry. Okay? So why are we so confused? Why are we always like, oh, I want this decadent lifestyle. I want to be just like so-and-so-and-so. Decadence is characterized by or reflecting a state of being. And I'm going with that second part, luxuriously self-indulgent. When we think about the word luxury, we look at wealth. We look at elegance. We look at expensiveness. We look at leisure. Oh, so to be luxuriously self-indulgent means we are wealthy and elegant and we like expensive things and we have time to just be leisurely. So the question I pose, can one be both decadent and luxurious at the same time? Can my lifestyle be decadently luxurious? Can you have this decadently luxurious lifestyle? Hell no. Hell to the no. There is no way in hell that you can have both. That's like saying, I'm going to be an iceberg on the bottom and Sahara Desert on the top. No, you're not. You can't do that. It's not possible. Right? So we need to figure out why so many of us have been duped. Why so many of us have fallen into this crazy decadent trap. This crazy decadent lifestyle trap. Because that's what we're chasing, right? They give us these options, and either of the options, it doesn't matter. Frog legs, goat brains, it doesn't matter. All of those options are tantalizing you with one thing. Accept one of these options, very limited options, right? This is for the masses of people. Accept one of these limited options, and you could possibly get yourself into a decadent lifestyle. And because we associate decadence with elegance and expensive things and time to be leisurely and wealth, well, we all say, hell yeah, I'm definitely trying to get into this whole decadent lifestyle thing. And that is how the trap is set. Someone is designing this trap for us. Someone is designing the decadent trap for each of us. Who is it? Who's doing that? Why in the hell would somebody want to design a trap for us? Why trap us in a decadent lifestyle that only leads to moral and cultural decline, decay? I was on Instagram today, and I was just going through, scrolling, doing my thing, and I read a post, and it was posted by one of my former students, actually. The post said something like, don't blame anyone. And I am paraphrasing all kinds of wrong. Don't blame anyone for the shit you're going through. Remember, you planned it. Because as God, you like testing and challenging yourself. It is amusing to you to see your power and how powerful you are. And I thought, you know what? That's some shit right there. That is some shit right there. So I'm left with this question. Lilith, why the hell? Why have you been planning all these crazy traps for me? Where's the joy? Where's the fun? What is this? I just want to see if you can figure this shit out, Ellen. I want to see if I can figure it out. I want to see just how impressive I am. I would like to see what I've learned from every time I've taken flesh. How do I know what I've learned if I don't test myself? How can I measure both my knowledge and my understanding if I do not test myself? Exactly. So I figured that, well, fine, because you knew what was going on, Lilith. I'm talking to my beast, right? But you never told me what the hell was going on. Answer, I needed you to figure this shit out. I needed you to use me to figure it out because I needed to know that I could. So, our Enchanted Beast designs all these tests, all these traps, all these, let me see what you're going to do here, moments in our lives. And it is a design. And there are a lot of elements that go into designing something. So what is a design? It is purpose planning and or intention that exists behind an action, fact, or material object. So there is a purpose, right? You can't have a design if you don't have a purpose. You can't have a design if you don't have a plan. You can't have a design if it is not done with intention. Because there is an action that you want to see take place. There is a fact that you want to reveal. There are measurable objectives that you want to witness when you design anything. And that's the beauty of it. It doesn't matter what you're designing. If I'm designing a test, if I'm designing a building, if I'm designing a plot, if I'm designing a character, if I'm designing clothing, if I'm designing anything, it doesn't really matter, because I have to have a purpose. I have to have a plan. I have to have intention. I have to have an action that I want to see come happen from this thing. I need to make sure that there's some fact of information that's going to be ascertained. And there has to be a measurable way to say, yep, that whole situation worked out just the way I wanted it to. So design, in other words, is purpose, planning, and intention behind action, fact, and material objects. Just so you know. And because this decadent lifestyle trap is designed for us, it leads me to believe, I mean, honestly, I think somebody trying to set us up, y'all. Somebody has an intentional plan to cause a predetermined outcome. Who is it? Lilith, why do you have an intentional plan? But why not tell me? Why not reveal this to me so that I can know what's going on, so I can avoid the trap? I don't want you to avoid the trap, Ella. I want you to learn the design. I want you to know and understand the principles behind design. The traps are not to be avoided, Ella. Y'all, if you have not been listening in to this podcast and you don't understand how surly and rude my enchanted beast is, I mean, I guess she gets to be that way because she's divine and all that, but duh! Sometimes my beautiful enchanted beast that presents as a lovely black wolf, well, she can be a real bitch. And yeah, I just heard, yeah, what about it? She doesn't care. Learn the damn principles, Ella, so you can share them with other people. So to fully understand how the decadence lifestyle trap is designed, we have to know the principles of design. And again, it doesn't matter what is being designed, some diabolical plan to take over the world or an environmentally friendly way to build houses, right? Doesn't matter. There are 7 principles. Some people go with 5. I'm going to go with 7 because, hell, I'm going to go out on a limb and say, yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that Lilith probably used all 7 of them. Because why not? She's an arrogant girl. 7 principles of design. Balance, rhythm, pattern, emphasis, contrast, unity, movement. I'll state them again. Balance, rhythm, pattern, emphasis, contrast, unity, movement. Your design has to include these 7 principles. A principle is that thing that we hold true to make shit work. So if you are designing anything, it must be balanced. You can substitute the word stability or stable, right? So your design must be stable. It can't be teeter-tottering all over the universe, right? It must have a rhythm to it. We're going to replace that with sequence. There must be a sequence of how shit gets done. Or, I mean, you don't want to start in the middle and ping pong all around. You have to have some kind of sequence. There needs to be a pattern. And here's the thing. People get fucking confused when they think about rhythm and pattern. A rhythm is the sequence, the order in which things happen. A pattern is the repetition of certain parts of the rhythm. And emphasis. When we place emphasis on something, we're placing stress on that. Right? When we're doing iambic pentameter, we're saying iambic pentameter. And you know that that little line means you hit that a little bit harder than you do the softer part. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You hear the stress. That's the emphasis. Contrast. Like, you need to be able to see the change, to experience it. I need to know that I am going from red to blue to yellow, and I need to see the change in those colors. Unity, assimilation, everything needs to be unified. It needs to work together. It needs to look like one whole congruent thing. Like it was always meant to be a unit. Thirdly, movement. Control. I love that. I absolutely love that movement means control. If your design does not have movement, then it's all over the place. There are no parameters. There is no flow. There's no reason. There's no intention. But once you have movement, once you can create movement within your design, then you take control of how that design is actually received. So the working parts of our trap, of this decadent lifestyle trap. Remember, we fall into this trap. We step into it unknowingly, for the most part, at around the age of 18 when we graduate from high school. We walk into this trap because they offer us 4 or 5 piles of shit. And then they say, you need to accept one of these because otherwise there is no chance in hell of you ever attaining any of the stuff you think you might want to attain. So we choose the less stinky, or we accept the less stinky pile of shit. Right? And then we go about our business being very passive as our life continues to progress. So the working parts of the trap are principles, the plan, and of course the implementation. I just went over the principles: balance, rhythm, pattern, emphasis, contrast, unity, movement. The plan is the intention behind the design, the viewpoint of the designer, and the structure the designer wants this to take. How is it implemented? There are certain actions that must be taken by the one who will be trapped. There are certain facts that must be pushed and accepted. Right? So the designer is going to push the facts. The one who will be trapped will have to accept these as facts. And then there has to be measurable ambitions. The designer decides what those are. Lilith, why? What is your intention? What viewpoint are you coming from? What? Why did you structure it like this? Why did you do this to me, girl? So we start by organizing the truths or the propositions that will serve as the foundation for this system, this designed system. So Lilith, why? What were your intentions when you decided you would design this trap for my life? Well, I wanted you to seek stability and control. I wanted you to want that for your life, to be both stable and to have control over your own life. Because that's what we want, right? Decadent lifestyle, as it is presented to us, says if you do da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you will have a stable lifestyle that you are in control of, that you actively control. Who don't want that? So what's your viewpoint, Lilith? Like, what's happening here? What's the purpose? What is the purpose of it all? Well, I think it's important, Lilith says to me, that you understand that stress and change are constant. So I want you to understand the principles of emphasis and contrast. Know that stress and change are constant. And the plan, the structure, what is it? I need you to kind of buy into the idea that there is a sequential order in which things have to be done. You cannot skip shit, Ella. I want you to pay attention to what needs to be a repetitive part of your life if you want to attain balance and control. And I need you to assimilate, not with everybody outside of you, but I need you to assimilate with me. I need you to seek unity with me, Ella. Because that is the only way you will attain balance and movement. It's the only way you will attain stability and control. It is the only way you can be actively engaged in creating the enchanted lifestyle I want for us. So I'm not arguing so much anymore. Right? Explain the intentions to me, Lilith. Talk to me about them. All right, balance and mobility. Wait, I thought you said control. Yes, mobility, movement. If you are in control of your life, then you control how you move within your life. You are not bound by some system that is in place around you. You are in control of how you move through this space, in this time. You are not constrained to the physical limitations, Ella. Okay. When you think your man is trying to dupe you, but he slips a 2-carat diamond on your finger and says, "I've been working so hard to get this for you," and you thought he was cheating on you. Oh my goodness, I am in love. So, okay. Teach me, Lilith. Teach me, enchanted beast. I need you to do some things first. If you are going to attain this balance and mobility, my intention is for us to be balanced and in control, to be stable and in control. I need you to look at what seems to be balanced, stable lifestyles. Look at them. I want you to believe the false narrative. I want you to look at them and say, "Wow, that decadent lifestyle is the shit. And I want it." Because unless you believe the false narrative, you won't pay attention to it. I need you to want that, Ella. And guess what? If that's what you want, you're never going to get it. Because I am never going to allow you access to that. I just want you to crave it. I just want you to study it. I just want you to pay attention to it. I need you to see this decadent lifestyle for what it is. And what is it, Lilith? You tell me. Oh, yes, it is. It is the decline of moral and cultural people. It is decay. It is destruction. It is depravity. Indeed. But keep looking at it. Because I'm going to give access to some of the people that you may know. Some of the people who look like you, some of the people who came from the same kinds of places that you came from, their beasts are going to give them access to it. And then you're going to say, "Well, damn, if they can do it, I can do it. If they can achieve this decadent lifestyle, then I know I can do it." Trap on top of trap. And so I want you to work for it, Ella. I want you to work so hard for it that that's all you can see. That's all you can think about. It's all you can hear. It's all you can breathe. Because when you are that deep into the decadent lifestyle trap, Ella, that you don't hear me anymore, I'm going to slap you silly with stress, change. Change, also known as trauma here on Enchanted Beast Podcast, I'm going to knock you out with it. I'm going to put so much stress on you, you're going to think you've been forsaken by whoever it was that you were worshiping and going on bended knee for. I am going to inundate your life with so many changes, like whiplash invoking changes. You will believe that you are losing your mind. And then I am going to allow you to watch those people that you have always wanted to emulate. I'm going to let you watch them fall. I'm going to show you how decadence isn't the same as luxurious, isn't the same as posh. I'm going to show you how depraved, how morally corrupt, how culturally sodded these decadent lifestyle dwellers are. Because I need you to see it for what it is. I need you to see it for what it is so that I can show you how powerful I am and we can use this decadent lifestyle trap to be about the business of me. So, the structure of my plan. I'm going to give you a sequential template. So whatever option you accept, I already have a sequential template for that. You choose option, or you accept the option to go to a four-year school. I have a sequential template for that. You accept the option to go into the workforce, legal and illegal. I have templates for that. You go into the military. I have a template for that. You get married right out of high school. I have a template for that. I have a template for every shitty option you're presenting. Because you need to learn that there's an order to things. And then I'm going to show you some repetitive, ritualistic things. Things that have been repeated over and over and over and over, generation to generation to generation, and people still think this is the only way to do it. I want you to fall deeply into those benign, repetitive patterns. Because when I raise you up out of them, Ella, you will see how very, very limiting and limited those things are. Now, I am not calling out anything. Because in my mind, I know what repetitive rituals I engaged in. Being born and raised in a Black Baptist church and, you know, here in South Carolina, going to church every Sunday, not getting home until late, going to Bible study every Wednesday, choir rehearsal every Tuesday and Saturday, traveling with the pastor, going to church anniversaries, spending all my time, and then just being afraid to even experience my own lust. What the hell? Praying day in and day out on my knees, begging a God to forgive me, to provide for me, to help me, apologizing, repenting for being so imperfect. Yeah. The last thing I need you to do, Ella, Lilith says to me, is once you figure out all this nonsense, or before you figure it out, I want you to try your damnedest to amalgamate with the masses. I want you to become one of the sheep. I want you to push yourself to become one of the sheep. Assimilate, unify with decadence. Here's how this whole thing panned out for me. I graduated from high school. I enrolled in college. 2 years later, I transferred because I was flunking out. I went to a technical school for 2 years, and then I enrolled into another four-year university, and I graduated. I fell in love with writing within the last 2 years of my undergraduate experience. I knew, I said, this is exactly what I want to do for the rest of my life. I want to write. And you know what I did? I got married. I got married and I took a job as a department store manager. And then I took another job has a cell phone call center employee because I needed insurance because I also went and got pregnant. And then I studied and I got my teaching credentials. And then I started teaching. And then I decided I needed to buy a house, the husband and I. So I did. And then we bought a minivan because we bought a home in the suburbs. And so, yes, because the neighbors drove minivans and I had a kid. And then I said, I need to get my master's because a lot of the teachers that I hung out with, they got their master's. So I did that. By the time I graduated with my master's, I'm probably about $70,000 in student loan debt. And I didn't care. Why? Because I used a lot of that student loan money from my grad program to go on vacations. Because again, all of the people around me were going on vacations to make sure I had good stuff in my house and my yard was nice, because you can't live in the suburbs without having this kind of stuff. And I spent a lot of money on birthday parties. I kept having babies because everybody else was getting pregnant. And then I taught, and I never was it, like, I enjoyed it, but I was never fulfilled. And then one point I was just like, leave. This is not where you're supposed to be. But I said, oh, I can't do that because, shit, we just filed bankruptcy. I need my job. We are losing our home. I need my job. I have to find some place for my family to live. And we continued on. I continued on. And the entire time, I kept repeating the same patterns. I kept going through the sequential templates that I thought would land me into this promised decadent lifestyle, keeping up with the Joneses. And then I was forcing the assimilation, y'all. I kept going and going, pushing myself further and further into this decadent lifestyle that I now refer to as suburban hell. But again, the decadent lifestyle, that was my decadent lifestyle trap. Your decadent lifestyle trap could be something completely different. And then do you know what Lilith did? My beast said, I have been working with you. I gave you the nudge, right? You are graduating from university. I said, it's time for you to go off and write. What'd you do? You got married. And then you took a job that's not going to help you write. And then you bought a house. Or then you got pregnant. Then you bought a house. I said, fine, I'm going to let you do that. But I'm going to blow your gallbladder up because I need you to listen to me. I didn't listen. I went and got myself a teaching job, and then I went and got a master's. Then I had another baby. Then I bought some more stuff, and then I got more in debt. And she says, you're not listening. So I had like my eyeballs explode with iritis, and then I had some issues with my thyroid gland. And then she was like, why aren't you listening to me? I am trying to tell you what I need you to do. Nope. Didn't hear it, didn't even want to hear it. I kept going through with the repetitive rituals. I kept going through with the sequential things that I thought would land me in the decadent lifestyle I loved. And I just forced my way in to unity with the other sheep. And then you know what she did? She says, I have had enough of this shit, Ella. You are going to listen to me. You are going to learn what I need you to learn, and you will exhibit your understanding of this knowledge, or you will die. And so I finally set my ass down and started looking at the trap I was in. It took a diagnosis of systemic lupus erythematosus, further diagnoses of Sjogren's, Raynaud's, secondary high blood pressure, secondary upper GI tract inflammatory issues, secondary narcolepsy with cataplexy, secondary POTS, secondary small nerve neuropathy, secondary cluster migraines, secondary anemia. It took me losing my ability to walk on my own for almost a year. It took me almost losing my sight for months. It took me descending into the bowels of hell with vivid lucid dreaming due to cataplexy and narcolepsy. I will readily admit that I was a stubborn sheep. But when I did see everything for what it was as clear as day how the trap was set, how I fell into it, the lessons I needed to learn from the trap. The understanding I needed to gain from going through the trap. How each trap, each time I got further and further into the trap, how those times were preparing me to move into my most enchanted life. Now, had I paid attention and listened to Lilith earlier, when I was 24, 23, who knows? But she was prepared. This heifer was prepared to take me through it. So, that's the first part of, I think somebody's trying to set me up. I think we need to really take a look at this decadent lifestyle trap. There's a reason we have them. And there's a way to use these traps to truly establish the enchanted lifestyle we deserve, we want to live. Well, that brings us to the end of this episode of Enchanted Beast Podcast and our bi-weekly walk through the Enchanted Forest. I'd like to thank my sponsor, Anchor FM, on Spotify for their continued support. I would also like to encourage you to please call into the show, leave me a message. I'd love to put you on. Feature you, give you a shout out if you have questions or if you want to make a comment about anything you've heard. I'll share how to work these lifestyle traps to your advantage and live your most enchanted life at the end of the month. I'll be heading out to Las Vegas next week, so put some great vibes out here for me. Send me some love and compassion, some protection, some positive vibes, right? Until next time, this is Ella Shine. This has been Enchanted Beast Podcast with your host, Southern Gothic erotic romance writer, Elishan. Thanks for joining me in the Enchanted Forest. Reminding you as always to be brave, be beautiful, and live enchanted.